Everybody, this is the Georgia Songbirds. We are here with Ms. Christina Martin, singer-songwriter out of Canada, right?
Yeah, Nova Scotia, Canada. Yeah.
Nova Scotia. Okay. Introduce yourself, Christina. Tell everybody a little bit about you.
Sure, yeah. So, as Jesse said, I'm a singer-songwriter based in Atlantic Canada. I was actually born in Florida.
Really?
But I guess I can't really call myself a Southern girl because I grew up in East Coast Canada for the most part. But yeah, that's where I started my life. And my songwriting journey really didn't start until I was about 19 years old, and I had moved to Austin, Texas on a kind of a whim. I was at a low in my life and didn't realize it was the live music capital of the world, and I took a job as a nanny there. And I mean, it's a longer story, but it changed my life.
Oh, I'm
It
fine with
changed my
long.
life.
My guitarist just moved to Austin. My lead guitarist, he's now living in Austin. So I have a little notebook with like notes, and one of them was you worked as a nanny. So you got to tell me stories, because when you say nanny, I think of that show, the where they're so mean and they're like whipping the kids and they gotta get them into shape.
Yeah, that was my tactic as well. Like, I definitely used physical and psychological abuse with the children that I looked after, and it was quite effective, to be honest. I don't know what all the fuss is about, not striking your children. I digress. I was a nanny in Austin, and then I kind of was a career nanny for a bit. Like, I went to Germany. After my first summer in Austin, I bought an acoustic guitar because I was inspired by the singer-songwriters in Austin that my host parents encouraged me to go out and hear live music. And I was like, what is this live music thing? Like, I just didn't grow up with that in New Brunswick, the province I grew up with, the town that I lived in. Like, we listened to the radio and, I watched music videos, but I hadn't been exposed to like singer-songwriters and storytellers. And there it was in Austin. And my host mom also gave me The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. And that, got me on the path to developing kind of like a discipline and how to live an artist's life and develop these healthy habits. And it changed everything for me. And so I bought an acoustic guitar, and I loved writing, like journaling, and I loved singing, but I didn't know if I, if I had a good voice or if I could even songwrite. Then I went and I was a nanny in Germany, and I didn't know any German. And I remember like just the kids kind of taught me German, and I would just mess up. Like, I would say things like in German, okay, kids, hurry up, come, your breakfast is getting mushy, hurry up and come and eat your muesli. But in German, I'd say, "Komm schnell, dein Frühstück geht mushy aus," and mushy means like basically vagina in German. And the kids would laugh at me, and it took like 2 or 3 months for the 9-year-old Nikki to be like, "Christina, do you know in German? Do you know what mushy means?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I know what mushy means. It means soggy." And she's like, "No," and then she just points down to the female genitalia. And then, like yeah, I had some really great German and Texan and Halifax, Nova Scotia too. I was a nanny when I moved back to Canada in 2003. I had some great experiences, but I had also some struggles when I was in Germany with my host mom. We had a bit of a throwdown. I don't know. And I like had to leave abruptly. And it was a little traumatic, but I think those kinds of experiences really do, kind of shape who you become. And of course, along with all the other struggles in my life, over the decades. So I've used all that in my songwriting. But yeah, nannying was like a re gave me time, to develop my songwriting, to be honest, and transition from like just things I was doing in my life where I just was not happy. And I remember, taking these nanny jobs, and it was like a great transition into doing songwriting, having time for myself in the evenings or when the kids were off busy. I would work on my songwriting, and like I could, when you're a nanny versus when you're a parent, I don't have that experience, but you can kind of hand the kids back over and then you're done for the day. But when you're a parent, I guess you can't do that. So I like that freedom where I wasn't, you know, I could just kind of go and do my songwriting and develop that.
Yeah. See, my wife is from Germany. So she's German. So I'm gonna have to use the word mushy on her, see if she starts giggling.
Hey, mushy. Yeah. Tell her, hey, du bist geil. Tell her she's geil.
Yeah, okay. I'm gonna write that down. See, I always tease her about her language. Like, that's not like a very sexy language. Just that everything is an E.
It's not sexy, no. For some reason, I was really drawn to like study German. I studied it for years after that. And now, like, we tour there quite a bit. Like, we're going about to go for 3 months. And it's odd. Like, I didn't realize I would be using it so much in my business as a musician. And I'm just so glad, like, trying to learn the language now where we're so busy as we get older. Like, I'm glad that for some whatever fuck up reason, I was like, I'm going to learn this language, like German, which is not romantic at all, like Spanish or French, you know. And so I can speak a little German, not as good as your wife, obviously, but yeah. Does she speak German? Like,
she does. She can. She's an army brat too, so they moved around a lot, but she was born in Germany. She's a citizen. She's been in the military now for 27 years. I can't get her to retire. But she's lived with her oma in Germany for a while. And she still speaks it every now and then, but I can understand some of it, a little bit of it. I pick up on some of the words, kind of the root words, but otherwise, I mean, usually she doesn't when she's mad at me. So,
oh, cool. Got it.
Now you mentioned like the kids. I had to say, with the kids, I could imagine the stories that you could get from kids from Nanny. Because, I mean, I'm a songwriter too, and some of my favorite songs have come from the ideas of the kids. One of them, you mentioned like not being able to hand the kids off. Well, my wife, when she was mobilized, she was gone for a year. She was in South Carolina, so she was still in the States. But the kids were like 4 or 5 years old, starting kindergarten. So I had them for the year. And I'm sitting there playing. I'm writing a song called Please Come Home. You know, it's basically just like, come home, help me with the kids. And when I started, it turned into a song about like relationships and things that you've done wrong. But I made a video one time. I'm in the bathroom where all the acoustics are the best, and I'm playing it, and my little son Gibson keeps running in. He's like, hi daddy, right in the middle. I just kept it in the song. It was funny.
Oh, that's so adorable. That is cute. Yeah, we don't have kids, so we don't have those experiences in our studio, but I can remember my earlier songs, because I lived with some of these families like when I stopped nannying, but I didn't have a place to stay in Austin, for example. I lived with the Andersons, Allie, Jacqueline, and Dane Anderson. And I remember the youngest, Allie, liked songwriting and was writing these songs. And just, it was just interesting to watch. You know, I didn't really analyze my own songwriting at the time, but to see her pulling these beautiful phrases out of, you know, thin air and really enjoying just making stuff up. And she would sing them for me, and you know, and then just kind of writing songs. Some of their lives was in some of my earlier songwriting, and just I was there living with them as an observer, but also not. I mean, that wasn't my job. I mean, I felt like family with them, but I was, you know, also observing as kind of like a big sister, kind of figure in their lives. So yeah, it's funny, like the people around you, whether you have kids or not, or if you're traveling, like it all becomes a part of your songwriting at the time. And then when you play them back, you have all those memories, you know. They're great triggers for that time in your life. It's a great, like a photo album, really.
Yeah. Well, they always had that show too, that kids say the darndest things. They have no filter at all.
It's nice. Like, I mean, you know, as we get older, we definitely censor ourselves more, sometimes for good reason. But I do miss, like, I do try to, you know, one of my, I guess my missions is to be yourself, like be authentic. You know, think you want to consider more like what you're saying, be more intentional. But like, I do find people aren't as honest as adults sometimes. And I miss that. I miss that bit about kids where they're not censored, and you don't necessarily take it all as personally because they're kids. Well, we take things so seriously from adults, but what if we just stopped and let people, like, let's be real, let's be honest, you know. You can learn a lot from kids for sure.
Yeah. Now, I was doing like some reading on you. Did you also work with like healthcare?
I was a counselor. I studied psychology in university, and then I did it used to be called respite work. So I would work with young adults and adults with intellectual and physical disabilities, and I did that on and off for many years. I've worked in group homes or in organizations where you go into the resident's home and you're providing support. So I did that. Yeah, that was something that I did over many years. Yeah.
So like you did stuff like dementia and stuff too, right? Is that what I was reading?
Oh yeah, you read a lot.
I try.
So I was initially he was a fan of my music. I was approached by a doctor, a world-renowned geriatrician named Dr. Kenneth Rockwood, who's now a friend of mine, Ken. And Ken approached me initially to write a song about his hero, Dr. John Gray, who's kind of known as the godfather of geriatric medicine in Canada. And then I was later invited to do an artist residency with Ken in the memory clinic, his memory clinic in Halifax. So my job was essentially to spend some time learning about Alzheimer's and dementia, and then observing Ken and his the healthcare workers and the individuals living with experiencing this firsthand. And then, you know, I would meet with families if they were open to introducing me to their loved one who was living with dementia. And I was kind of just learning about this thing in the caring profession. And then my job was to write songs. And I actually co-wrote a bunch with my husband, Dale Murray, who produces, co-produces, mixes, engineers, has been doing that for all of my albums since 2008. And so I'm no expert in dementia and Alzheimer's, but I did have an interest in, you know, the mind and brain, just because of my background and my curiosity for psychology and the caring profession, like it, and just human nature and going through something adverse in your life. And so it was really a fascinating time for me, and a big challenge as a songwriter to go from writing songs just about like myself and my experiences, and to kind of have like a bit of an assignment and figure out how can I do this and find this connecting element that I can relate with and other people can relate with, you know, to this bigger topic. It was really challenging. Yeah.
See, that's what I love about music. When as a songwriter, you always get your eyes and ears open to the world. And you, everybody sees things different. That's kind of how it is. And when you turn around and you write your music, now you can write about anything. Like, I mean, you got deep, meaningful songs, and you got songs that are just fluff. And then you got songs that people take to heart. And to me, with music in general, it doesn't matter. From my favorite style of music that makes me happy is reggae. You turn on reggae, I'm happy. I don't know what it is about reggae music, but it lifts my spirits every time, no matter how mad I am. Turn on country, storytelling. If it hits me home, it'd be like, oh, that song got me in the heart. Now, that leads to a question too. I always like to ask multiple questions, and you're going to find we play video games and stuff in here too. I got a 20 question thing at the end. I always pop up.
Oh, I love it. I can't wait.
But one of the questions I always like to ask guests is, what song inspired you to kind of pick up the guitar, start playing, or what kind of, where did you come from? Or means the most? You can put it that way. What means the most to you?
Well, oh geez, it's a good question, and it is hard. It is a challenge to answer. So I'm actually going to go back to my host father in Austin gave me a cassette tape, and on the cassette tape, there were some Austin singer-songwriters. Sean Colvin was on there. Casey Crowley, and just singing live. And so I started listening to these artists, and that got me to go out, you know, and listen to like live music and hear real in-person like singer-songwriters just with their acoustic guitar. And I would say one of the songs that I, apart from in Germany, I went to this, it was kind of like a YMCA, because I was just learning how to play acoustic guitar, mm-hmm. and sing at the same time. And I would go to this like YMCA type thing, and it was a bunch of Germans and me, and we were learning Beatles songs, like just singing together and playing together. But I remember Sean Colvin did a cover of Bob Dylan song, You're Gonna Make Me Lonesome, I think it's called. And I'm not a very good finger picker, but like at the time that was, I was learning just by listening and finding these notes and kind of developing a really simple version, simplified version of that, because I wanted, I saw the guitar as a tool for me to have independence and get out and sing by myself. I wouldn't have to rely on anybody else, mm-hmm. To do an open mic or to do my own gig. So, yeah, I guess Sean Colvin, like, and her, you know, her knowing her playing like by herself, she's a phenomenal guitar player, got me into finger picking at that time. I don't really do much of it anymore. And playing the acoustic guitar so that I could have get out and have the freedom to sing by myself. And then, you know, Patty Griffin was another one at that time in my life. And I mean, I grew in, like, eventually my desire, I suppose my visions grew to like, okay, because growing up, I loved Tina Turner and David Bowie and
yes.
Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And so like those bands, those groups like Eurythmics, and seeing them with a group of musicians behind them, you know, it evolved to, well, I want to do that. And then I actually really enjoy some songs. I like playing guitar, like I'm a decent like rhythm guitar player, but I really love throwing my guitar aside and just getting out and singing the songs and kind of communicating and reaching out and having that freedom on stage to wander a bit and just tell the story and really get it across, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think watching these artists and even in music videos and like live performances of David Bowie on YouTube, you know, and how they can be, if seemingly be themselves and connect with, like be human and be professional at the same time. And it just, you know, I was just like, oh, I want to do that. I want to, you know, that's, yeah.
Well, let's hear one of your songs. I'm going to share the screen with you, and we're going to pick from one of your songs on Spotify. You just tell me which one you want to hear and share with everyone.
Okay, yeah. Me tell you which one of my songs we want to hear?
I always let you pick.
Oh, that's nice. That's very courteous of you.
I will say this. I will say this real quick. I was looking at the song, The Winner Takes All. I have a cover challenge I do with a guest sometimes. I have them, I'll give them a song to choose. And one person actually gave me a song to choose, or they gave me a song to cover. And The Winner Takes All was it. And I listened to yours. I'm like, that song is hard. And so I had to turn my guitar. Like I turned it like the C sharp. I dropped it a step and a half, mm-hmm. and I made it as sad as I possibly could.
Yeah, same, right? I mean, it's a very, I used to dance to that song when I was a kid.
But yeah, any one of your songs available, you pick, we'll listen to it.
I would say, since it's on the upcoming new album, I would say let's go with Little Princess. How about that?
All right, Little Princess. So tell me the story behind Little Princess.
Sure. So spoiler alert, I'm a little princess in the song. For a short period of time, my family lived in this miniature castle in a place called Rosse, New Brunswick, until my dad committed bank fraud and literally left in the middle of the night and disappeared for a while. And I have this memory of like laying in my bedroom, looking up at the night sky, not at the night sky, but at my ceiling. My dad had floodlights up on the house, and so there'd be the windows would reflect like onto my ceiling at night. And I remember laying there one night and making this poem up, and I was so excited about this. I ran over to my big brother Stefan's room. He was about 6 years older than me, and he was like a really brilliant multidisciplinary like artist, visual artist. He was great, great writer, and I always looked up to him, as young, you know, little sisters do. And I went over to his room, knocked on the door, and you know, he was annoyed, opened the door, and I was like, hey, I just made a poem. Can I recite it to you? And I did. And he patted me on the head and said, good job, sis. And he slammed the door in my face. But it was kind of like one of those first memories of like writing something where I felt excited, like, oh, I wrote a poem. How cool is that? You know, and I admired songwriters. I wasn't thinking about writing songs, but writing a poem, that was pretty up there. And so the first lines of this song, I should say my brother Stefan, he died in 2013 of an opioid overdose, and we were quite close, and it was very tragic. He had, you know, very tragic ending to his life. And the song really kind of reflects our relationship and these two artists, we, you know, living these sort of different paths and our relationship. So when I sing it, like, I always feel closer to him. There's a couple songs that I've written where it helps me kind of keep the reality of our relationship and our lives alive. I don't want to forget. And I, you know, you go about your life, you're busy. I don't always think of him. I just don't. I don't think, you know, your head stuck up your ass. And when I am on stage and I'm singing these songs about our life, like, I remember, and I think that's really important. Like, so I'm the little princess looking up to, you know, him, and he's kind of waving his wand of approval, you know, as I looked for approval for him for so many years.
Of a simpler town, I turn to you to read my poems. I looked up to you to wave your wand over my head, little princess. You direct my route. You shut me up, you shut me out. I'm a fighter. Path to what I know is love is not the brightest alleyway. I turn to you to read my poems. I looked up to you to wave your wand over my head, little princess. You direct my rhyme. You direct my rhyme. Come from a total stranger. I turned to you to read my poems. I looked up to you to wave your wand over my head, little princess. You direct my rhyme. You direct my rhyme.
Brings back memories. Does I see when I watch people reaction to their own songs, a lot of people don't like it, but I see it's bringing memories to you. And
well, it did make me emotional, because, you know, there's a line, you took some wrong turns wearing burn like a shield without your mother. So my brother Stefan had a different birth mom, and my mother raised him for the most part. First, I think 4 or 5 years of his life, he was living with his mother, and there were some unfortunate circumstances there, and you know, she was unable to keep him, and so my mom and my father ended up raising him, and lucky for us, like we grew up together. But his mom was brutally murdered when he was 13. And I can remember being told, you know, not all the circumstances at the time, because we were all young, but he never really, I don't even know if he knew how she was, you know, her life ended very tragically. And we never really talked about it as a family growing up. And it makes me very emotional and sad, because he had so many struggles with mental illness, addiction. And I mean, no wonder. You know, like he never really had the chance to form these very critical bonds with his parents, with any of his parents, like I maybe had with my, you know, mother or my father at times in our lives. And you know, people wonder why, what, you know, how did your lives end up so differently? Well, there's so many reasons why now, right? But mm-hmm. we just never talked about that stuff. And it does break my heart for him that he didn't get to experience love in the way that, you know, I have. That's the thing I wanted for him, was to find love and a sense of safety. And so I am heartbroken still that just wasn't something he could experience. So I do get very emotional when I hear it, and sometimes when I sing it, but it's good. Like, it's good to feel these things, right? Like, you know, but it's, yeah.
And see, that's why I ask the questions about this. I'm a songwriter too. So when I hear stories of songs, I like to dig into the story. And if you just play it out and about and live, people won't get the full meaning of it. Cause I mean, basically, we play out in the music. They're just listening to the band. They're listening to the rhythm. They're not listening to the stories as much, unless you happen to get into like a little storyteller thing, and they'll listen. So I always ask that question, and some people don't want to answer it, but to me, I that's fine. It's your own way to do it. But for me, it kind of connects. Like, people that listen to my show, they may not have heard you before, but now they know the story. Okay. They're going to feel something. They're going to dig into it.
Yeah.
My mom had me write her a song. She wanted me to write her a song for the longest time. And I kept writing crap, crap, crap. And I finally got her one, and I wrote it for her. And then she died like a year or so later. And I'm like, but she got to hear it. Oh, it's okay. She had COPD. And I mean, she was funny. I got to put her on a podcast for a Mother's Day episode. Year.
That's wonderful.
The last Mother's Day.
She had a blast. Did she love that?
Oh, she completely threw me under the bus.
Good.
Oh my God. It's probably one of the funniest episodes I've done. And it's because it's true. I mean, it's my life. Everybody, I mean, if you listen to your life, everybody has hope and they have tragedies and they have all kinds of things. And so to the
Jesse,
day
you gotta send that. You gotta send that to me. That
yeah, I absolutely will. I'll send it to you. You can hear it because the day she died, she swore I sold my body for sex. She just wouldn't, because my friend told her I did, and for like this one girl. Right.
There's no shame in that. Right. Jesse, if you need to earn a little coin and you enjoy the process of having sex, getting my, you know what?
Yep, just a gigolo. That's, you know, just.
Good for you, buddy.
Oh, I used to be better when I was younger.
I want to hear that episode.
Yep, I will send that to you. I would definitely send it to you. I liked your voice on that. It reminds me a lot of like Juice Newton. I don't know if you know who Juice Newton is.
No, I
don't. She sings the Queen of Hearts. I'm gonna share it with you. And a little bit of Carly Simon.
Oh, thank you. I love Carly Simon. Wow.
So
the Queen of Hearts. I feel like I know that song. Maybe?
I'm gonna play it real quick for you.
Okay, sure.
You ever heard this song?
I think so. Yeah, the chorus, I know. This is great.
that reminded me of your voice. Has got a very 80s like country vibe to it.
That, you know, I'm thinking now I need to, we were just watching the George and Tammy show series on Apple TV. And I was like, I do get, sometimes I get a wide range of references. So sometimes I get, believe it or not, Dolly Parton. Sometimes I get Stevie Nicks, sometimes Joan Jett, Kate Bush. And, but sometimes I'm like, the country references come out a lot. And I wonder if that has a lot to do with when I started writing songs and was, you know, heavily influenced by the singer songwriters, the Americana music. You know, I love pop and rock. And I think there's a bit of that, you know, but like, you know, Roy Orbison, big boomy voice was a big influence for me. Annie Lennox. But I do love country singers and country music. I'm not as schooled in it. But sometimes I'm like, why don't I just sing country? It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to sing. But anyway, thank you for those super cool references. You know,
sure, of course. I mean, my voice comes out growly. I got a very growly voice for the band. Yeah, because it's more southern rock. I'd love to be country, but my voice, you hear me talk, I'm country as hell. But when I sing, it's growly. And it comes out growly. I always tell people, it's like, you don't want to hear me if it's a dark song, if we're in the dark and I'm singing to you, it's going to scare the hell out of you.
So you're not going to sing like I Will Always Love You, like Dolly's song?
Or
that'd be cool to hear growly.
I'll try it. You know what? I'll do that. I'll do a cover challenge. I'll give you a cover challenge too, and I'll try that one. I'll Always Love You. I'm going to kill it, but that's fine. And not in a good way.
Sounds good. Love it.
Oh, now, did I read you built your own label too? Your own music label?
Well, it's funny that you say built my own label. I mean, yes, I am my own record label. I do what record labels are supposed to do, and I just do it myself. I pay for everything. I say that, but in Canada, I have been blessed with, you know, being able to access some marketing and tour support over many years. I still rely on it, to be honest, to go out on tour and to launch my albums, hire a publicist in all the markets. And I do all that stuff. I'm self-managed. I've had at times distribution deals, but they always didn't really work out. And I just was like, well, I'm just going to go back to using CD Baby because that works for me. There's no middleman. I'm earning more revenue. And I, you know, there were times I was just disappointed in the services, what was promised to me, what I was paying for. I was like, this isn't doing anything for me. So why don't I just do it myself? And if I'm doing this full time, you know, that's my job. So the music business has become even, you know, takes up most of my time. And songwriting is kind of a seasonal thing for me. I really have to fight to make time for it. But it's allowed me to do this, you know, like to every couple of years put out a record. But it's a lot of work running, you know, but I don't aspire to, like, I don't put out other records for other people is the thing. Like, I mean, I manage my husband's studio and catalog, but like, he's not very active in his solo stuff. So it really is just, it's a record label to just support my career, and it takes everything, it takes all my time. So I don't release other bands.
See, I tell my wife, if I ever won the lottery, I'm going to start a daggum record company that does that. I mean, I've already got for my publishing company, it's Snuggle Bunny Music. It's what it's called. That's just what they pick. It's one of my songs. But I was like, I want to do that for other artists because that's what I started this for. I started in North Georgia, obviously, and I'm local singing from people that I know. I was like, who wants to talk to me? We'll see, play it by ear. And then now I meet people like yourself from Canada and people from Australia. And I love the camaraderie of songwriters because as big as the community is, there's a few that are people who are jackasses. We know that. But for the most part, everybody's good. They help each other. Why not? You know, because there's different styles and everybody has different experiences. And I mean, I was reading some of your stuff about your experiences. And one of them, and you didn't say this yet, and I'm surprised because this is a huge one. Did you perform for the Queen?
Oh my goodness, I did. So that was part of a big production on every year on Canada Day on Parliament Hill in Ottawa. Artists come together and perform. Usually a member of the royal family is there. The Queen wasn't always there every year, but the year I was invited to perform, she was, and she was sitting on stage, her and the King. And then they lined all the artists up, and I got to shake her hand. And I really wish they had taught us the protocol. I did everything wrong. Like, you're supposed to, I guess, curtsy and like clean your boots and all that. My boots were muddy. You're not supposed to speak until you're spoken to. I didn't know any of this. And so, like, of course, I jut my hand out and I'm like, so nice to meet you. I'm so excited to meet you. She just, you know, shook my hand and didn't say anything back. But, you know, she has a lot of hands to shake. Like, that's like a big, big job. And but it was really a moment for me. I mean, when I grew up, like, you know, the royal family, all the like magazines like that, my grandparents and my family, like, we kind of ate that stuff up at our house. And when the Queen was in town driving by, you know, you would get your gardens ready, and it was like you just wanted them to see, to look your way and like maybe smile and approve the gardens. And it was a big deal. And so I remember my mom and my grandma like thinking, you know, like, my mom's still alive, but my grandmother wasn't, but how she would be so tickled, like, you know, that had happened. So it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool, you know. And then to perform for, I think, 30,000 people on Parliament Hill at that time in my career, where at that, you know, like a year before, I had already made it, because I had put that's my second album out. I never dreamed of putting an album out initially. You just like, can I write a song? Can I get up on stage? And then you start, you know, your dreams start getting a little bit bigger and bigger. And then you shake the Queen's hand. Like, what the fuck?
Can he top that? I mean, that's how do you top that?
I don't know. But I mean, I got to say that, like, I'm a big fan. I love the Killers. And in 2019, we were invited to share the stage and open for them at the RBC Blues Fest in Ottawa. So that to me actually topped the Queen, where I was standing on stage next to Brendan Flowers, and no, I didn't say anything to him because I was like, I'm not going to bug him. And then, standing on stage, watching them perform, like, it was exhilarating, just incredible. And getting to open up for that, you know, was just, that show was incredible. Yeah.
Now, I can't imagine. I think if I ever mentioned Dolly earlier, I've been trying to get Dolly, find a way to get Dolly on this show. I would love to talk to her, because she has influenced so many songwriters, so many people, that it's just, with music, like I said earlier, that it touches people. That's something about music. Everyone listens to it. It affects them all differently. It's so much fun. And so, like, I can still remember the first song I ever heard on the radio. It was an Eagles song, Heartache Tonight. Oh, yeah. It was the first song I ever heard on the radio. What about you? You remember your first song on the radio?
It was either Vincent by Don McLean. That was a big one that I remembered. And I memorized the lyrics. I recorded it on my cassette, you know, on cassette tape.
Mm-hmm.
Or Going On Up to the Spirit in the Sky. I can't remember the original. I think it was the cover version of that. And I remember jumping up and down on my bed, just like, really believing in the lyrics, like, going, we weren't a religious family at all. Like, my dad was total atheist, but I remember thinking, like, I'm going on up to the spirit in the sky. That's where I'm going to go when I die, you know? Mm-hmm. And like the guitars and in that song, it was really cool and rocking. And then the total opposite, like this folk song, Vincent, didn't know what it was about, but there was something in it that I felt, you know, this connection to.
Well, this is another one of your songs. Which one do you hear next?
Do I have to pick this one?
I could pick it if you want me to.
Yeah, you go for it. Hopefully I remember the story behind it.
All right. Let's go with Lungs Are Burning, because I'm going to go by the hook. And that's just like, okay, that's an interesting hook. Lungs Are Burning.
Ooh. Lungs Are Burning, interestingly enough. I had been reading about the opioid crisis in Canada. This would have been back. This would have been actually after my brother died of an opioid overdose. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that, like, if you don't experience that kind of a loss in your life, or you're not going through it yourself, it's really easy to just not pay attention. You know, we just don't want to, there's so many things going on in the world. But I was very interested and concerned because it had happened to my brother. And, you know, here's this super brilliant guy and his life was just ripped apart by drugs. And so I think reading about it in the papers and online blogs and whatnot, and it was when I, you know, expose myself to anything, it usually, if it's a tough thing, I'm sorting it out in my dreams. Like I'll have dreams or, and sometimes I hear songs and melodies in my dreams. So this one, I remember, that was the case. I had a dream, and the line was just, hearts are burning, hearts are yearning, and we're reaching to fill. I can't even remember the line of my own song, but anyway, I woke up and it was a very urgent thing. I don't get this all the time, but I remember waking my husband up and saying, like, I got to write this song today. And, you know, do you want to work on it with me? And, it turned into like lungs are burning. And so it's a pretty dark song. And I guess the uniting force is that, you know, I do feel like, you know, a lot of people have different kinds of addictions, and, you know, a lot of us are addicted to our devices, if not a drug or a shopping or gambling or eating. Like there's just so many different kinds of addictions that we, you know, and sometimes if you stop to think about what is it that are missing in my life that I need to fill this void, or that, how does this even develop? You know, if you stop to really analyze it all, and I feel like, I think we're, you know, we all can kind of relate to this. Maybe it's not a severe drug addiction, but mental illness, you know, or this feeling of like filling myself up. I'm missing something in my life. What is that? And then trying to fill that with something healthier, maybe. I don't know. But I guess it was on my mind, that commonality of like filling the hole, you know, in our lives.
Tina, if I woke my wife up to work on a song, she'd probably yell at me in German.
Get up on something. lungs are burning, hearts are yearning, and we're reaching to fill ourselves. Lungs are burning, hearts are yearning, and we're reaching to fill ourselves. Our lungs are burning, hearts are yearning, and we're reaching to fill ourselves. Lungs are burning, hearts are yearning, and we're reaching, 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 reaching.
Like that song.
Thank you. I can hear the Fleetwood Mac and the Bowie influences and on that. And I will say, like, you know, I work with this great rhythm section, Jordy Comstock and Jason Vautour. I've worked with them for many years, but I do, you know, I'm a big fan of that vibe and that feeling in recording, like on my albums. It's quite, I think, a common thing. I'm mm-hmm. not a huge fan of cymbals, but there's a time and a place for them, you know, but I just love that warmth, that richness, you know, that the rhythm section brings. And those two guys, like, are just really phenomenal to work with, and yeah. come with great ideas and are very open to my, you know, like, any, you know, my ideas or suggestions. And
it's, yeah. I was going to say it was very 70s, but it's also very authentic. Your voice is very authentic. I can feel the pain as you sing. And that to me is a feat that's hard for a lot of singers to hit. And I felt that it was really good.
Thank you for when people say, I mean, I joke about this, but you know, people comment on my voice or whatnot, I'll say, well, thank you. It comes from a place of pain, but it does in some ways, you know, but then, you know, I do have songs about love now more than ever. And I, you know, I think that comes from knowing what love is. And I think having these experiences, like singing and songwriting, allows me the time and space to, oh man, like, it's helped me stay healthy, because that's when I feel things. Like, otherwise in life, I'm honestly in robot mode. Like, I gotta get this done, and I'm doing my bookkeeping and booking shows, and I'm a nerd, and I'm not too, you know, I'm not feeling anything really. I'm just like, I gotta get this shit done. And it's such a gift to have that space, to have a stage and a time to really feel human. And let it be okay. Like, it's okay. It's not still, I think it's hard for people. It's not always considered appropriate to be vulnerable. And yet we try to tell everyone it's cool to be vulnerable, but then, like, people are shit on, or like, no one wants to be around, you know, someone who's super real. And I mean, yeah, I just feel lucky to have, don't you, that you have that space that you can be, whatever you have the free reign to be however you want to be and feel and say what you want to say. It's pretty, like, we're pretty lucky.
Yep.
We'll say.
Yeah. I always, people, my music is more heathen music. It's just because it's not like the same thing coming from, I write better for pains. Like, I got a song that's called Pretty in the Dark. It's not a nice song, but it's a story about people, you know, they put it on the front, like they go out to meet somebody in love. You're not going to find love of your life in a bar. You're just not, you know, I shouldn't say you're not, because somebody, maybe they did, but for the most part, you know, they don't, but they keep going. And there's a line I put in there about, like, you're the sheep in wolf's clothing. You think you're the wolf, but you're not, you're the sheep. And it just, to me, that's my stories. I grew up, my dad was a biker when he was alive. He died on his motorcycle. So, I mean, I know those, that's the life that I lived. And to be authentic, I have to sing that. So yeah. Like the lovey happy stuff, I have it, but I don't know how to sing about it.
Yeah. You got to do what you do what you know, do what you're good at. I think
hell raising is what I've always been good at.
Yeah, it's sometimes, I mean, every now and then I catch myself, I'll be singing a song and I know it's honest and it's how I felt at the time. But then I sometimes I like, oh, I feel bad because people are going to think I'm, or I'm bringing the mood down. But, you know, I then go, no, fuck it. Like, people are probably, this is probably what other people are feeling as well and are afraid to talk about. So you are providing this honest outlet for people to like go, oh, thank God I'm not alone, you
Right.
know, and just I think, yeah, it's just you do. Hey, who knows? In 10 years, you might be singing lullabies.
I think my twins love music, so I'm gonna leave that to them. They're learning to play. So I got boy and girl twins that are 14.
Oh my gosh, really? They're learning to, are they going to be in a, is this going to be a family band?
My daughter Cheyenne wants to start her own band, and I guess she gets this from me because my band is called Yes Man. It stands for Middle Aged Men. That's what the man is for. She wants her band is going to be called what is she? Psychedelic Sprinkles? No, Schizophrenic Sprinkles. I think.
Is she schizophrenic?
No. She just wants to do
Okay.
that kind of music. She just likes the punk music
Okay.
because she grew up.
Yeah.
I say grew up. She's 14 when I let her watch Wayne's World, and now
Oh,
she is
fun.
in love with Queen. That's her favorite band. So she wants to
Amazing.
deep dive and do that kind of music and like the Killers. She just loves that
Yeah.
stuff. So.
I love it. Oh, well, this is going to be interesting. I want her to send me her stuff when once she's got it on the go, you know?
Yep, she's trying. And I said, my son Gibson, named after my guitar, he wants to start playing guitar. He likes Marty Robbins and country. He's deep country now. So he's like Alan Jackson, George Strait. He listens to all that stuff. And it's just funny watching the two of them because they're so similar. They're twins. They do a lot of things together. How their music, I can see that I've kind of pushed them because I'm all over the place with music. I listen to Tupac. I listen to 2 Live Crew. I listen to Hank Jr. I don't care. I listen to anything. And it's just
Yeah.
funny to watch their lives and how that music has influenced them and what they do with their life.
Sounds like they got a great situation on the go, like with you
They're
and
spoiled.
your
I know.
wife and yeah, but like what a great like, you know, I think one of the things that I mean, you know, you can't really go, you know, I wouldn't be who I am today if I anything had changed, but I do think like if I had kids, the one thing that would be important for me to give them, which sounds like your kids have, is a sense of safety and trust in the people that are looking after them and like 100%, right? Once that's broken, it's really painful for kids, you know, and they feel alone and they don't, you know, they have trust issues growing up and whatnot and so it sounds like you're doing a great job with
Well,
them.
thank you. I try because I like you said, when you live the life that you live, I grew up in a biker family, heathen family. I didn't get hugs and kisses growing up. So I give the kids those. And to the point where they're like, Dad, leave me alone.
I feel like bikers, oh, you didn't get hugs and kisses? I always, so maybe it's a myth. Like, I always figure, like, when I see tough people who look tough, they're sometimes like the nicest people ever, and they aren't afraid to. But now I guess I'm wrong. And maybe like, did you feel like the biker family was pretty, like, always had to be tough, or
They
did
had
you
to be
find there were
tough.
some,
No, they had to be. They watched your back. That you
Okay.
knew. Like my dad, me and him stopped talking for a while. He was. I'm on family on land. It's kind of hard to explain if you're here. If you're ever in Georgia, you're more welcome to stop by. We'll do another interview. But it's family on land. So him and my mom had split up, and he lived at the bottom of the hill because my grandmother. I mean, when I say family on, the whole family had 9.5 acres. Everybody lived there. So
Wow.
he would walk up and he had his gun with him. I
Cool.
guess he was afraid that, she was going to be with somebody, but she wasn't. She was by herself. So he decided he was going to come down and talk to me and kind of bury the hatchet. And he slipped and fell and his gun went off. He shot through his ass and it hit his top of his toe.
What? That is such a George Jones story.
And he went home and went to bed, and he woke up in the next morning with a pool of blood.
I love that you're laughing. That's what else could you do? It's like, whoa, that's in that is so that's a That's a hillbilly story.
Is that's that a, well, that's, and I'm funny you say that. My wife, she, I tell her I'm a hillbilly. There's a difference between a hillbilly and a redneck. A hillbilly don't know any better. They just don't.
So that, okay.
Yeah, right, it was next. A very,
okay.
And so he had to go to the amazing. Hospital and talk to the cops about why he got shot. He said he fell off the porch. And I came and seen, like, him. That's when we started, I mean, talking. Yep. It was
that is a country song, right? Like, if you don't write it, I'm gonna write it.
Yep.
Like that.
Let's write it. That's fine.
My daddy lived down just down beyond the
down at the holler.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's you gotta write that song. Yep. That's hilarious and tragic at the same time. Mm. Wow.
Well, I told him, I said, if you wanted to talk to me, you didn't have to shoot yourself in the damn foot. Just come on down and talk. And yeah. He ended up dying a few months later on his motorcycle, but I'm glad that we got to squash it and wow. talk. So, but yeah. I remember that because it was funny because it was so stupid.
Pretty dumb. Yeah, yeah. That's pretty dumb. Like,
I'm lucky he had his 22 and not like his 45 or nine, something that would have shot his damn toe off, because all it did is grazed it. So he didn't lose a toe. He had a burn mark on his ass, and he had a scar on his toe where it hit him, and that was
Gosh. That's amazing. You know, fun fact, I heard through like a Michael Moore interview that actually Canada, you know, we give like, everyone says the States, so everybody's got guns. Do you know, I heard Canada actually has more guns like per capita than in the States. And I mean, it would be hunters here that you have to have a hunting license to have a gun. But in general, you don't, and it's always locked up. So we don't get to hear these stories that often. They're quite entertaining, it growing up in Canada. But that it sounds like an American tale for sure. Like, but definitely a good country music.
Yes.
Right.
I have to write it. I love writing. Let's write together. I'll write it. I'll get it in there. That's
yeah, I'll do it.
Well, like I said, we got, I'll do one more, we'll do one more of your songs, and then we'll get into like the 20 questions, kind of the fun part of the interview, where it's random questions, but let's go with the last song. Well, good. Okay. Me too. It's fun. I like talking. I mean, we've been talking for an hour. It doesn't feel like it. That's what I said. I don't ever have any time limit. So if you let me go, you better tell me, because if not, we'll talk for a while.
Okay.
Do you want to pick the last song?
Sure. Let's do a title track for my new album coming out is, I guess it'll be out by the time this launches, perhaps, yep. is Storm.
Okay. So tell us the story. And also you said you got a new album. So tell a bit about that as well, too.
Sure. Well, I mean, I knew the name of the album before the album was written. I knew this to me just, I don't know, it was just kind of like a feeling, like this storm represented, the song represented for me where I am at this point in my life, which is like, you know, I can look back, I can be grateful, there were tough times, I know there'll be tough times again, I'm surrounded by love in my life and good people, and I worked hard to have I'm always working hard. My goal is to have a healthy life and have healthy relationships. That's like my number one. And this song just reminds me of all of that. So, but going back to 2004, when I moved back to Canada, there was a storm, a first real hurricane that I'd ever experienced. These hurricanes weren't popular here. They weren't really a known thing in Atlantic Canada. And we had this storm, Hurricane Juan, hit Nova Scotia. And it took all of our big, like most of our big trees down, and really quite devastating. And then we had a white wan in the winter that shut the city down for like 3 weeks. It was quite a year. And I remember walking through, like I had a gig that night that the Hurricane Juan struck in September. My husband, first husband at the time, we moved from Austin back. And this was like a big deal for him to experience this. But we had a gig that night. Nobody believed this storm was going to be a big deal. And the power went out at the gig and we had to walk home. We were living at family housing at St. Mary's University where I was going back to school. And we were walking through the storm and I did not know if we were going to make it back. It was pitch dark. The electrical lines were just all over the place. The water, the streets were flooded. We were walking through the streets like in this water up to our knees. And at that time, like soon after, I had these lines that I'd written down We walked right through her eye. We dragged lines of electricity, water up to our knees. I closed my eyes, held on, and believed. I was holding my husband's hand at the time and just following him, hoping we would get back to our apartment. And you know, as a songwriter, like one of the things I do, and I'm sure lots of the songwriters out there do this, but is you sometimes all you've got is a line or an idea. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it doesn't make its home into a song or, you know, for many years. And I didn't finish this song until I just, you know, the last like 6-5 years. But I had this line and was able only to finish it all these years later and have this hindsight, you know, to have this gratitude for everything I've left, everything I've been through, all the losses and what I've fought for in my life. You know, I'm in a good place right now. So that's a little bit of behind the scenes behind this song, which is a song, I think, of gratitude.
See, and I'm glad you said that, because a lot of songwriters seem to think that songs have an expiration date, and they don't.
No. No, and I mean, you can rework. Like, I've got a lot of crappy songs that I know I'm never going to play live, but there's something in it. Like, there's an idea or a melody that still moves me, or a lyric. Mm-hmm. And you can, you know, take that and turn it into something else in the future. You just never know.
We walked right through her eye. We dragged lines of electricity. What I thought was strong. The storm took us away with pieces of a love that was tame. It muddied up and screwed. I sifted
That is such a pretty song.
Thank you, Jesse.
That the melodic solo and stuff, it made me think of November Rain.
You know what? In we joked about that. We joked about that in the recording process about, and there were a couple of like, I think one, I think at one point we were like, there was a Bryan Adams comment, like, this is sounding like everything I do, I'll do it for you. Mm-hmm. That might have been another song, but like that came up. We were like, we don't want to be all, you know, but I definitely, there was a, at one point, I don't think it was this song, but Prince, you know, came up Dale, just go. Dale, my husband, who played plays lead guitar and all my stuff. I'll throw these, like, just put on, you know, just put on your inner, like, let your inner Prince shine here. But that Slash did come up as like an inspiration for, I was like, these need to be epic, you know, like soaring parts. Like, just let your heart bleed, you know.
I really like, it's to me that this, and I read that earlier, that some of your stuff has been in shows and things too, right? It's very, your songs are very, how do you put it? It's they're visual to make you think of certain stuff, but there's feelings. There's like a, like, again, the pain feeling, and I can see it in shows, like in the CWs and things like that.
You know, like, if your goal is to make connections with your music, I mean, television and film is a great, you know, medium for that. And it's very competitive. Everyone wants to have their, I hate to say competition, but like, I just mean that everybody wants to have that opportunity. But it is, you never know, like, you know, music supervisors and shows, like, they need music, you know, combined with the writing and the scene, the right scene, like, mm-hmm. We all know it's just, it is more appealing to the senses. And when we think of those magic moments in movies, oftentimes it's the music is a big part of why we are moved emotionally, you know, combined with the great acting and whatnot. So, yeah, I love it when a song placement happens. I've had a few, and I hope, you know, to have more, but it's so fun to see that happen. Yesterday we did a gig at a theater called Neptune Theater in Halifax, Nova Scotia, which is about 2 hours from where I live. It's right on the East Coast, on the Atlantic Ocean in Eastern Canada. And I got to play this song I wrote called Where the Dark Meets the Light. I co-wrote it with my friend Matt Epp. But a couple years ago, about 5 or 6 years ago, before the pandemic, I was sitting in the audience in that theater watching a performance of Peter Pan, and they had adapted that song to be in Peter Pan. And I, you know, that was a real thrill too, to see mm-hmm. other artists take your song and work it into that art form. It was such a highlight, you know. It's like, I guess I'd not really ever had my songs covered, but like, that was kind of, must be, you know, I imagine what that experience would be like. What a fun treat, you know. It gives your song and your stories like a whole other life and opportunities to reach more people, you know.
Yeah, see, that as a songwriter, that's what I love. I love, I've had my, I'm 46 years old. I had my first cut. Now I've got a song, a lady wanted to cover one of my songs. Cool. And it's a jazzy blues song, and she's going to kill it. I hadn't heard the master yet, but I heard what, you know, she's working on it. So that was cool. So tell people that are listening, like, want to do film, because yeah, people say competitive is a bad word. I don't find it as a bad word. I think you should be competitive. You should strive to do better. If somebody's like, oh, they wrote this great song, well, they'll let me go write another song. Push yourself. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be like, hate them for it. Like, great. That was good. Good lines, good song. Okay, now I can get out and see what I can do. But tell people that are listening how, I know it's different ways, but how would, like, for your placement, how would you go about placing? Did you have like a company that you go to? Did you just meeting, networking, which a lot of, I know that's what it is, but explain your process on it.
In the beginning, It was really just luck. My songs were at a record store in Halifax, my first album, Pretty Things. And there was a music supervisor who was working on a production called Sex Traffic. And he was in Halifax. And he picked up my record and a bunch of others. And he contacted me and said, hey, can we use two of these songs? Actually, one of those songs was in a scene in this production, this UK-Canadian production, where the couple was fighting. And the guy goes over and he goes, and you listen to terrible music. And it was my song. And he shut it off. Anyway, it was just background music in that. But and then after that, you know, this is a longer story. And I forgive me for boring your listeners. But in Atlantic Canada, we have been blessed, musicians, to have like these opportunities to kind of foster the business side of the music industry with the artists and pairing them with the film industry. So there was an organization called the Atlantic Film Festival, and they had this program where they, you know, pair up like filmmakers and artists, and you get to actually meet people in person and pitch your stuff. And so that's kind of been an ongoing thing at music conferences in the East Coast. So I developed a bit of a contact list, and I try to maintain it. And I get a few placements, like from just myself, always sending my new singles and my albums to places. But then I have worked with other companies who pitched my stuff to music supervisors. I've parted ways with some of them, you know, not because they did a horrible job, but or anything. Just that, again, these organizations work with so many artists that sometimes you run the risk of being lost in the mix, you know, mm-hmm. and maybe you want to receive a certain amount of money, and they, you know, don't really work on that. They will just, you know, like sometimes you're not going to get a lot of money for certain placements. Or you can, as an artist, stand up and say, you know what, I deserve more for this placement, and try and pitch it yourself until you find a company that can get you what you feel you're worth, I suppose. But I actually am right now in the process of trying to sign on with some non-exclusive partners in different markets overseas in the UK and in North America, because I'm busy, and you do want your catalog working for you when you're not, you know, you're off doing the things you love. So I'm trying that again, and I'm really optimistic about it. I think an important thing to like for people to know, because I've struggled with this over the years, is like, you know, just because one thing doesn't work out at one time in your life, it doesn't mean you need to stop and give up and say, well, I'll never have that or that relationship. Keep trying, you know, things change. People are always coming fresh into the business. People part ways, and there's room maybe for new artists sometimes. Like, don't give up. Relationships can take years to foster. Like, one relationship I'm signing on with now, I met this person like maybe 6 years ago, and they, you know, expressed interest, and it's taken, you know, 6 years to develop, to get to this point where it's like, oh, now we're going to, you know, form a partnership, you know? So it's a bit of me pitching myself over years, bit of luck, and then working with other people too. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one thing that I think people get impatient with. And they kind of give up on something because it's hard. Well, if that's the case of why people get fizzled out in the music business, because it's not that you don't have the talent. A lot of it, talent ain't even got anything to do with it. It's part what it does. It has like half, 50% of it. You got to be talented. You got to be able to sing. You got to be able to play. You got to be able to write. The other part is you got to have the right, like I said, the right look. When something comes to you, take advantage of it. If you don't, then you miss it. Okay. That doesn't mean that's the only thing you're going to get. Another part of it is people around you. You got to have a good team, because we all have our strengths and weaknesses, right? Like I'm very good at writing songs. And when I'm playing, I'm good at keeping a crowd. Am I the greatest singer? No, but I do what I have to. Will I let somebody else sing my songs? Absolutely. Anybody wants to listen, take them. I don't care. We'll work out the money thing. I'm good at that. The business side of it, I get busy, you know, like everybody else. Mm-hmm. I'm not a marketer. I don't know about marketing. So while it's taking me these years to figure out how to do things, I could hire somebody that knows what they're doing and get it moved faster. And everybody says, oh, it happens overnight. Not really. It feels like it, I'm sure, because you're like, one day you're like, who is this? Next day, your music's playing in the radio. Oh, wow. But it's years and years of work to get there.
What's the saying? Like, an overnight success is like 10 years in the making?
Right.
Or 15, 20? Yeah. Yeah, I think it also, let's add on there, like, discipline, persistence, you know, drive. Persistence is a big one, like stick with itness. But I think you have to also, you know, be willing to put the efforts in, for sure. And it's a lot, but I think when you really feel passionate, you know why you're doing it, and you can come back to that. I'm actually working with a career coach right now who has brought me back, reminded me the importance of, like, what is your why? And when you get overwhelmed and frustrated, and we all complain, I bitch all the time about some of the boring shit I have to do in the music business side of things. But when I remember why I'm doing this, I can work a little longer, a little harder. And it's not easy, but who said it'd be easy?
Right. That old saying, if it was easy, everybody would do it.
Yeah.
It was, oh, I'm knocking on doors. Well, how loud are you actually knocking? That's be heard, you know, because yeah. I know with a lot of songwriters are introvert. I'm one of those people. When I grew up, I had a speech impediment growing up. So to get out of that, I forced myself to do this. I sing, I force myself in front of people. Now, you get me like at a bar or something, I'm usually quiet. I'm off in the corner. I'm drinking. I'm listening. I'm doing that. I don't just like open conversations. This, if you want to be heard, you got to do it. You got to get out of the comfort zone. You got to push yourself. Like you said, you got to be to the point where you're so stubborn that you just refuse to quit. Now, will you get to the top? That's, again, that's part of different other things. Does it mean you don't deserve it? No, it just means that things don't line up all the way. But if you enjoy what you're doing and you love and have a passion for it, then it doesn't matter, you know, because you're touch one person, and that's who, maybe like that song, like Garth Brooks, you know, you only affected one. What were you doing trying to save that one person? Well, to that one person, it meant everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe your level of success doesn't have to be, you know, winning a Grammy. I mean, that could be part of your goal to reach for sure. But maybe it's like, oh, I want to be able to pay my bills, or I just want to be able to put out a record every couple of years. Like, adjust your measure of success, perhaps, so that you're not totally miserable in pursuing your dream.
If you're climbing that ladder, you better enjoy every step, because if you take it for advantage, you're going to fall. Yeah. You're going to miss it. Don't miss it. That's fun. All right. Enough high horsing for me right now.
Yeah. High horsing. Yeah.
All right. Right. I've had such fun conversation. We're not done yet, Christina, but we're about to do the 20 question thing. So tell everybody where they can find you, your social media, all that stuff.
Sure. I think the hub is really, I'll just save y'all from me rambling on about my social medias, but ChristinaMartin.net will get you everything you need to know about me.
Now, where is my, I call this the wheel of death, and I don't know if you say that. It's a little wheel that on my phone has like multiple questions, all random.
Oh, this is little, fun.
Has a little sound effect to go with it.
Oh, nice. I hope there's a prize. The prize is talking to you.
That's right. Thank you. Best advice that you have ever received.
The best advice I've ever received. Was it my mother-in-law who was like, get over yourself? Is that what she said to me? Get over yourself, maybe. I also... I mean, I don't know if anyone's ever told this to me, but I like to tell it to myself, like, calm the fuck down. Like, just chill. Just calm. Because I do, you know, have anxiety, and I get worked up sometimes, and I have to kind of coach myself. But, get over yourself is a good one, you know. But I don't know. I like the people have said, you know, when I've expressed that I'm nervous about this one, well, just be yourself. And that is what I want other people to be themselves and see, that I'm just being myself, whatever that mess or maybe I'm not a mess that day, but like whatever I bring to the table, like that's how I want to be myself in front of people. So they feel I should be more like myself. I should be myself more in my day to day, like that. Like Christina is able to do it. What, maybe I can be real with people, you know?
Yep. We kind of touched on that earlier too, about just be yourself and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Next question. What is your favorite or most memorable quote?
Oh, Andy Warhol, who cares?
Right.
Like, fuck, who cares? Like, we stress out so much. Right? Who cares?
Right. What's a hidden talent? We know a lot about you. We've been talking for a little over an hour. So what's a hidden talent of Miss Christina?
Oh, I'm really good at cleaning. I don't know if that's hidden. I think actually most people know that about me. I love organizing and cleaning.
Do
yeah,
you?
Love it. Purging. Oh, yeah. Probably should be my business, to be honest. Yeah.
I told my wife, you have to come talk to her and show her how to do that. Because of me, I just throw things away. I'm like, you know what? Just throw it away. Get rid of it.
Yeah.
We don't need it. If it's been sitting in a box for 2 years, you're not going to miss it. But I promise you, every time I've done that and I've thrown it away, she's asked me about it. 2 years later, hey, did you find what I'm looking for? This, I just threw that away yesterday. It's been in a box for 2 years. Why do you miss it now?
I always have to ask my husband, is it okay? And he might say no, we keep that, but then 5 years later he knows too. Like if he hasn't used it in 5 years, he will then say, yeah, you can get rid of it. But I did learn that I have to ask him before I chuck anything.
I'm on my second marriage. You think I'd learn by now?
it's cool. You're getting there,
right? One day. I bought my wife a card when we were dating, and it's saying, I'm sorry. I was like, you're going to need this at some point in our relationship. Just hold on to it. And she still has it.
God. That's amazing.
If you had a time machine, where would you go?
Oh, where would I go? I would like to go, I don't know. I'd like to go watch a David Bowie concert, I think, anywhere. Maybe somewhere in Germany.
Okay. I teach my wife about liking David Hasselhoff because she's from Germany. They love him over there.
They do, yes.
I had a rocket scientist on as a guest one time. He was actually a musician from Texas, and we got into the story about, is time travel possible? And then he gave me all this different stuff and that it could happen, but it was so cool.
Oh wow.
His name was Mark Winters. Mark, if you're listening, thank you, buddy.
Very cool.
Would you rather have endless money or endless love?
Both, but I mean, I like the endless money thing because it brings freedom. So wait, if I had the endless money, you're saying I could not have endless love?
Right, it's one or the other.
Oh, that sucks. I guess endless love. Damn it. I do like money. I do like money.
Right, who doesn't? It makes the world go round. You know what? I tell my wife, I just buy me love. She said, you better shut up.
Yeah, if I could buy my love, yeah.
Have you ever been given a nickname?
Well, Xtina is my nickname, and the boys on the bus when I used to be the sports manager of the basketball team, they used to call me Xtina. And then when I was in a band here in Halifax, my friends would call me Xtina, and so that's kind of stuck. Yeah, other than like my brother used to call me Christina carpet cleaner when we were kids, thinking that would annoy me, and I was like, that's stupid, dude, you can't come.
Now you terrible. Said you manage a basketball team.
Oh yeah, in high school, like I quit the basketball team, I've all my friends were playing like on the girls team, and then I became the manager for the boys and the girls, which just meant that I was responsible for the water bottles and keeping score of like all the points and that people made, and tallying all that shit up and telling them how great they did at the end of the day. And I got to go on the bus with everybody and skip classes and stuff.
That's cool. My little girl is joining the wrestling team. She wants to wrestle. She wants to be, ooh, like I said, you can tell she takes after daddy because we'll watch like professional wrestling. So she wants to do that for a living now. That's her dream job. She wants to go into WWE and just beat the hell out of people.
Fun. Good for her.
What song makes you cry?
I Will Always Love You. Whitney Houston's version.
Oh, and you want me to try to cover that? That's going to not make you cry. I'm sorry.
I can't wait.
I'm going to make it sadder than it is. Mine is That's My Job, Conway Twitty.
Oh, I'll have to check that out.
That is the story of my life. It is a father-son thing. Okay. And it hits home every time. And if I'm not prepared for, because my kids want to see me cry. I don't cry hardly at all, and they want to see me cry. So that song, if I'm not ready, it will get me. And that movie, I Am Sam, every time, because I'm watching it, and he just wants to take care of his daughter. And I'm like, I was 19 years old when I got my first wife pregnant, and I got married. I did what I was supposed to do, and didn't work. 7 years, long story, she cheated and left. Like, I broke my back, and she left when I broke my back. So, you know, that was, I'm laid up at a house, and the guy's like, oh, you can't take care of your kids. But, well, I have a kid. He's 7 years old. I got to take care of him. And he's actually getting married in October. His name is Wyatt. He won't listen. He says my voice puts him to sleep.
Oh, all right, Wyatt.
So I could talk all about him. He won't even know. What was your first concert?
Tina Turner in 1993 in Montreal. We did. So my jealous. Dad took, yeah. Yeah, my dad took us to see the What's Love Got to Do with It movie, and we literally ran from that to the concert, and it changed my life. I mean, I literally walked out of there starting to visualize, I want to be a backup singer dancer, like an Iquette kind of thing. One of my first bands that I was invited to sing in Austin was called Young Heart Attack, and I was a backup singer dancer, played tambourine, and it was a 70s rock revival band. I thought I'd made it, you know.
So that's, they kicked you out.
It's a longer story. Yeah,
We got time if you want to throw it down. I'm okay with it.
We'll skip this one.
Okay, that'll be for the next one. I have to remember it. All right, one more question for you, and I'll let you go. Where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years?
Oh, well, right here in my home, writing songs, and I'm working on a project right now where my dream is to maybe do a symphony orchestra performance. So I've got some songs charted now, thanks to some provincial funding and support. And my job now is to try to find like an orchestra that would collaborate and to figure out how to make that happen, you know, on the business side of things. So my goal in the next 5 years is to have one of my first orchestra performances. That would be amazing if I could. I'm gonna go for it. We'll see if it happens, you know. But I just want to be able to keep doing this, like writing and releasing music. We have our home studio, and to have, like, I mean, I have everything. I a loving husband, we have a great home and a simple life, really. And to be able to tour my music, I'd like to be able to keep doing that. But it's always sort of like up in the air. Can we continue? You know, can we afford to do this kind of thing? So I hope I can still be doing that in 5 years, play for more people.
Okay. And I talked a little bit off air, but before we let you go, thank you again for coming on the show, Christina. I have had fun.
Me too, Jesse. Thanks for having me.
You're more than welcome to come back any other time. I tell people, you know, you can come back. I do album reviews. And when I do album reviews, it's not typical. I'm not going to critique it. I don't ever do that. It's basically what we did is you tell me the story. We listen to the songs. That's it. I don't need to know anything else. I don't have to tell you if I like it, I don't like it, which I usually will. I mean, I don't think I tell anybody I don't like it. I'm not going to be mean and hateful because it's opinionated, but I'll listen to it and hear the stories. You're welcome to come back. All right, everybody. This is the Georgia Songbirds, and that was Miss Christina Martin. And tell them one more time, Christina, where they can find you, your website.
ChristinaMartin.net.
There you go.
Yeah, say hello. Send me a note. Find me on socials. Listen to my podcast, A Chat with Heart. It's very much like this, A Chat with Heart.
Yes, and you should promote that. I have no problem with promoting. I tell everybody, I didn't know you did a podcast. That wasn't in your bio.
Yeah, no. Well, I guess, I don't know why. I suppose because it's like, well, you know, the music is the focus. But I will say conversations with heart and being authentic. You know, that's what led to the Chat with Heart podcast, and I'd love to have you on there sometime.
Absolutely. We'll set it up. We'll talk off air too, so we'll set it up. All right, everybody, this is Georgia Songbirds, and that was Miss Christina Martin.